Thank you for joining us as we continue our celebration of Women's History Month with a very special guest, the number one New York Times bestselling author, Kristen Hanna. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and you're either watching or you're listening to Answers Network. And know that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show brings on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, if you can't listen live, know that all of our shows can be found at Answers Network. And I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a wonderful favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, Kristen is the award-winning and best-selling author of more than 20 novels, including the international blockbuster The Nightingale, which was named Goodreads' best historical fiction novel for 2015 and won the coveted People's Choice Award for the best fiction in the same year. In 2018, The Great Alone became an instant number one New York Times bestseller, and was named the best historical novel of the year by Goodreads. Four Winds, another one of her books, was published in February of 2021 and immediately hit number one on the New York Times list. It was also a Wall Street Journal, USA Today, and Indie Bookstore's bestseller list. Additionally, it was selected as a book club. It was picked by The Today Show and the Book of the Month Club, which named it the best book of 2021. Now, The Nightingale is currently in production at TriStar with Dakota and Ella Fanning set to star. TriStar has also optioned The Great Alone, and it is in development. Now, Firefly Lane, her beloved novel, which is about two best friends, was the number one Netflix series around the world in the first week that it came out. Now, the popular TV show, it stars Katherine Heigl and Sarah Chalk. Hanna now brings us her next epic, The Women, set during the Vietnam War. Hanna, welcome to Answers Network.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you, Alan.
Well, it is my pleasure, and I'm so glad that you could join us at this time. And having had a chance to go through some of your other books, I love the fact that you do period pieces. And some of my favorite novels are ones that touch on history, so that I feel like I'm learning. And in some cases, it can be a history that it's still recent enough that it also brings back memory. And that's what I found with your book that now touches on the Vietnam era. So what propelled you to write that particular era? Because for those of us that were around then, there was a lot of controversy going on at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've actually wanted to write this book for 20 years. I first pitched it to an editor in 1997. And not this book exactly, but, you know, a Vietnam era book. And my editor very wisely said, you know, you aren't really old enough and you aren't really ready. And frankly, nobody wants to read about Vietnam anyway. So why don't you, you know, put this on the back burner and think about it for a while, which is what I did. And I think the reason that this book and this era was so important to me was I was a child during the Vietnam War, elementary school and junior high. And it cast a huge shadow across, you know, my childhood. My best friend at the time, her father was an Air Force pilot who served in Vietnam and was shot down. And at that time, we wore these silver prisoner of war bracelets. So I got my first one, I think, got his when I was 11. And it had his name and the date that he was shot down on it. And the idea was that you would wear these bracelets in remembrance of the service men and until he came home. Right. And so I wore this bracelet for decades. He never came home. And so his story and his name was sort of always in my consciousness as I was growing up. And then later on, of course, I saw how the Vietnam vets were treated when they came home. And because a lot of them were my friends' fathers, that really impacted me deeply. And so I kept wanting to write about this era. And you know, every couple of years, I think, is this the time? Am I ready to do this? And I kept thinking, no, not yet. No, not yet. And then in March of 2020, I live in Seattle, and we were on lockdown, of course. And I was watching the news, you know, as we all were, you know, right, all the time. And I was seeing the division, the chaos, the anger, you know, I was seeing things happening in America that felt very much like the Vietnam era again. And I was also seeing our doctors and our nurses who were on the front line of this pandemic sacrificing so much for us. And often I thought not getting the support and the recognition and the gratitude that they deserved. And somehow at that moment, it all came together to me. And I thought, I'm going to write about, you know, the forgotten nurses who served in Vietnam. And I thought it was time for this subject to, you know, to sort of be back in conversation again.
Well, I couldn't agree more with everything that you just said. And as you were describing that, one of the things that it was reminding me is in about that same time, a lot of what I was doing was working with at-risk youth. And I started to see this this continuing dialogue of them, of doom and gloom, that, you know, that we're never going to get through this. It's only getting worse with the divisiveness, with the, you know, just everything that was going on. And as strange as this sounds, I told some of them when I realized that it was on, I think, Amazon Prime, and I said, I want you to watch a TV show called Laugh-In. And they said, what? And I said, I'm serious. I said, because what you will see is that during that time, and this, it started in 1967, for those of us that remember Laugh-In, I said, when you watch this, you will see that much of what they're talking about, and they're talking about how divisive it is, and they're talking about, you know, issues with war, issues with diversity, with pollution, and so on, that there was a time in which a lot of us were thinking, wow, I don't know how we're going to get through this. So I tried to give them something to where we've gone through this before. Many of you don't realize it, but we can get through it again. And so anyway, it's interesting that we sort of had a similar thing. You saw it was time to bring something out to let them know that we have been through this time before and shine a light on it. And I think that's great.
You know, I think, Alan, it's, I mean, that's one of course, the benefits of historical fiction is you can, you know, highlight an era and you don't really have to say anything about it personally or politically. Your job as a novelist is to put people in the shoes of other people and let them empathize and sort of metabolize that era and come to these conclusions on their own. And, you know, I know that when The Four Winds, my previous book, came out about the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl, it seemed, you know, light years away from where we were at the time when the book came out. And yet suddenly we were in the middle of a pandemic. And it was really important, I think, for people to read about the Great Depression and remember the sort of the great courage and resilience of the American people. Exactly. And how we have survived and changed and grown and come back to who we want to be, regardless of how far afield we sometimes go.
You know, and it was one of the things that I recognized in your book. I'm getting feedback. So let me pause for a moment. Anyway, as I was saying, one of the things that I got from your book was that there was no slant to it. It was you were getting information and you were putting it out there for people to feel it, to feel the emotion, and which I think is wonderful, because one of the things that drives me crazy now is with our news and everything else, everything has a slant. You know, it's no longer news, it's views. It's okay. And it's like, okay, you're giving me your view, but that's not the news. That's not exactly how things have happened. So again, one of the things that I really appreciated in your book was, again, I felt there was no slant. It's, you know, we're placing you there. We're letting you feel what it is that's going on at that time.
Yeah, I worked actually really hard at sort of threading that needle, because it was, you know, it was a fine path I was trying to follow. But one of the things that the book says, you know, obviously it talks about how important it is for us as a nation to show gratitude and respect for any serviceman who we send, or woman who we send into harm's way. And it is obviously incumbent upon us to care for them fully and completely, you know, when they come home. Obviously, that is hugely important. But it was also really important to me to show that the protest mattered as well, and that, you know, that this was a time where people were very quick to sort of stand up for what they believed in. And even though there were people on both sides of the equation, it's important for us to remember, because we've gotten to this place in America where you're either on my side or you're wrong. And we need to remember that we are so much stronger when we're together, and when we recognize and empathize with and incorporate a larger sort of worldview than that.
Again, I couldn't agree more. And what I hear you saying is that, you know, we were kind of at a time, or at least and I felt that we could disagree, and the concept, we could come back to the concept of freedom of speech, and we could look at it and go, well, I may not agree with that, but you have the freedom to express that. And I don't feel like it's there now. Now the idea of freedom of speech is you have freedom of speech as long as you agree with me.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing for those of us who have, you know, been around a while, you know. And one of the things that's interesting about the women is my protagonist Frankie. Part of her arc, of course, which represents the generation, is this realization over time that her government wasn't telling her the truth, and that the media wasn't therefore reporting the truth. And so there's, you know, that's important. And here we are in this time period now where it is really difficult even to just find unslanted news. You know, we've sort of moved into these encampments, and somehow we have to find our way back to this idea that the news is supposed to be objective.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. In fact, and it made me think of something. And I have no interest in this particular website that I'm going to mention, but there's a website called All Sides. And what I like about it is that it takes in the news that comes out there, and then it tells you, you know, this particular news agency reports this like this. Understand that they slant left. This particular news agency reports the same thing, and here's what they say, and note that they slant right. And so you actually get to read it in both ways, but you're also being reminded that, you know, you can look at two different things and go, okay, now I can have a better chance of figuring out what might be the truth.
Yeah, it is definitely incumbent upon us to become, you know, the best consumer of news that we can be.
Well, and again, one of the things that I love about your book, and most any book that is researched so well. And again, for those that don't know my real job or whatever, I'm an international detective. So research is my thing. So as I did my research on you, I learned that you're known for your meticulous research. So I was like, this is great. and so especially, you know, as I'm now reading the women, I'm going, well, this is no exception. So My question is, what were a few of the most compelling or startling facts that you learned when researching the Vietnam War, and particularly about the nurses who were there serving our country?
Well, research, of course, I love. I mean, I love doing it, and it's hugely important. And this was the first time I felt that I was writing a historical novel, which, by the way, is during my lifetime, but I'm not going to get into that. This historical novel. And I knew that there would be a lot of people reading it who had actually experienced the things that I was going to be writing about at a much, you know, deeper level than I had as a child. So it was really important, you know, to be as accurate and as authentic as possible, to sort of be true to the extent that you can be, because sometimes truth and facts aren't exactly in alignment, you know. Mm-hmm. But the thing that surprised me the most in doing the research, and you and I were speaking about this sort of in the green room, I guess, mm-hmm. was the amount of times that I kept reading in the nurses' memoirs and in historical accounts that women, upon coming home, had been told repeatedly, but there were no women in Vietnam. You know, the VA can't help you. There were no women in Vietnam. You can't do a veterans march against the war because, you know, this is men and we want to be taken seriously. And if you're here, you know, we will be treated differently. And so here were these women who, like many of their male counterparts, had been raised in greatest generation homes and sort of, you know, fed into their pride over their family's service in World War II. And these very young women, you know, answered the call of duty as nurses and went to serve their country, and then came home and just were repeatedly told that they hadn't been there, and found their history erased. And in addition to that, you know, PTSD was not something that was being well treated for male veterans, and there was certainly no help for women. And so that was probably the most amazing thing, because, you know, you can't imagine how people didn't know that women were there. Women were there in World War II. They were there in Korea. They were there in World War I. They were there earlier. We were watching MASH. So it was very clear that women were there. And so the extent to which their service was forgotten or erased, depending on how you looked at it, was absolutely stunning to me.
Well, and stop me if I'm in any of my questions, if I'm giving away too much, too much information on the book. So feel free to stop me at any time. But you mentioned Frankie, and Frankie, for those that haven't read the book, is the Vietnam nurse and star of this book. She saved hundreds of soldiers' lives. But you mentioned that, I mean, through her parents and particularly her father, they couldn't see her as a war hero. Now, did you find that this lack of acceptance or her heroism was indicative of how many parents of that time viewed their daughters? And if so, why?
You know what? I think, Alan, it's entirely possible that this particular issue extended to male veterans to some extent as well, because you're talking about a time period where, you know, we talked about the tumultuousness of the era and the political division. And what was happening, in fact, when these vets came home in their uniforms, they were spit upon, they were flipped off, taxi cabs wouldn't pick them up. Nobody wanted to talk about as the tide turned against the war. Nobody wanted to sort of separate the soldier from the war. But with women, I think it was even a further layer of invisibility. And I think for many, many female vets coming home, their families were actively ashamed that they had, you know, gone over to serve. I did a signing, where was I? I forget. I think I was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania recently, and a woman stood up and she was crying at the microphone. Mm-hmm. And she said, "I've been waiting for this book for 50 years. when I volunteered as a nurse to go to Vietnam, my father got so angry at me for doing this. And he said, you know, essentially good women don't go off to war, and didn't speak to me again for years. And so I know that these kinds of reactions, existed.
Well, if I can, I'll go on a little bit of a soapbox. As you were saying that, I think part of the frustration that I'm feeling is, and maybe the similarity to what's going on now, is those people were then, or whatever war they've been at, are out there giving everything for us, for our freedom, and for people to be upset with them, as you said, spit on them, things like that. That is not who you need to vent your displeasure with. Do it towards the politicians that sent them there. That's
exactly.
Yes.
And you know, I had one woman come up and she said, I am from a Gold Star Vietnam family. And I want you to know that we have grieved in shame and silence for 45 years or whatever. And I do think, as much as I often think as a historical fiction novelist, that we don't learn, you know, because things keep happening over and over again, I do believe that with respect to this issue and veterans, I believe we collectively as Americans recognized our mistake. And I think it was our shame and guilt which turned this into a taboo subject. And I truly don't believe, I hope to gosh, that we would not ever make this mistake again.
Wow. We are talking to Kristen Hannah. Her book is called The Women, and it is written based on the real-life nurses that served in the Vietnam War. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. If you're thinking of someone that you know who should be listening to this, this is the time. Contact them, send them a message, and say, go ahead and connect with us now here on Answers Network. We'll be right back.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. We're speaking with New York Times bestselling author, Kristen Hannah. We're talking about nurses. We're talking about the Vietnam War era. And when we went to break, we were talking a little bit about Frankie, who again is the star of the book. Is it true that the inspiration of the character Frankie comes from a real life nurse who did serve in Vietnam? And if so, what did you learn from her that maybe didn't make it into the book about what really went on at that time?
I wouldn't say that she was inspired by, because actually Frankie is kind of like a wholly imagined character who is based on many memoirs and sort of, I take all of the information and all the research and put it through, you know, the sieve of my mind and come up with someone who is different than what I have read about. But I did, when I finished the first draft of this, I realized that I was going to need some serious vetting. Because like I said, I wrote this during the pandemic. So there was no interviewing people. There was no going to places. There was no visiting. So I really needed help. And I found this woman, Diane Carlson Evans, who was a former Army nurse. And she had written a memoir called Healing Wounds, which is a remarkable book. I loved it. And so I really kind of, you know, stalked her on the internet until I found her and got her to read and really help me and mentor me. She's turned into quite a friend. And she was a profound inspiration. And she led me to others. There was a nurse named Beth Parks. There was a helicopter medevac pilot, Doug Moore. So she kind of had other people help me along the way. And I would say that, you know, the thing that was most interesting in terms of the truth and their experiences, I mean, a lot of their personal experiences just were too over the top even for me to use. I mean, there were, you know, stories that they told me and I thought nobody's going to believe that. And, you know, it was just sort of both the horrors of war and the camaraderie. I mean, I think the real beating heart of the women is friendship. It's about these three women who become friends. They're hooch mates in Vietnam, and they become friends for the rest of, you know, their life. And I think that, you know, we're all very used to seeing male war camaraderie play out. And so I really enjoyed being able to show, you know, to show that from a female perspective, how living through times like this that are so intense and so frightening really forge indomitable friendships.
Now, I have to tell you, I'm just so touched. And again, for anybody out there, you know, having had the opportunity to read through the book, and there's so many touching moments. And as you brought up, when you mentioned about camaraderie, you know, there are moments in which you feel what it is that they're going through, and yet the camaraderie seems to get them through. And that's one of the things that I found to be just so amazing, you know, while reading it. And again, there, you know, it's one of those things that at times you feel like you're being entertained. At times it's emotionally draining as you're taking this in. But Hannah, let me ask you. So, you know, as you're writing this, so, I mean, besides being, you know, you're entertaining people, you're also touching a very deeply emotional subject. If you had to kind of narrow it down, what do you hope that the majority of the readers will learn about this era of our history through your book, The Women?
You know, I've thought about that a lot, actually. And to go back a little bit to answer that, last November, Diane Evans was gracious enough to invite me to join her in Washington, D.C. for Veterans Day. It was the 30th anniversary of the Women's Vietnam Memorial, which she is the founder of, and she was speaking at the wall. And so this was really the first time, you know, post-COVID, I went out and I saw these nurses gather at their own memorial. And they do a thing called storytelling, where they come up to a podium and tell whatever story they have to tell about their service. And it could be the children, it could be the husband, it could be the service woman herself. And what struck me so completely was they kept talking over and over again about having been forgotten, about those in their midst who they had lost, you know, whether to Agent Orange or cancer or whatever it is. And I was just struck with how much it meant to them both to gather together again, mm-hmm. and to see, you know, 100 female vets standing at their own memorial, laughing and crying and talking. It was just heart expanding to see that this is, you know, 50 years later, a lot of them hadn't seen each other since. And yet they were sort of instantly sisters again. And that was really powerful. And then to realize that the point of their storytelling is really the point of the women as well, which is ultimately that remembrance matters. Mm-hmm. And I think we're living in a time right now, which I love, and it's one that is highlighting diverse and marginalized and forgotten historical stories. Because we've all, you know, you go through school and you learn a certain view of history, but there's so much more. And I just think it's important, if we want to be the best of who we are, we have to remember the contribution of so many groups that have made our country what it is.
Yeah. Well, the story that you referred to, so for our audience, that we talked about in the green room, and it kind of touches on this concept of these nurses being invisible, you know, being over there serving our country and yet literally being invisible at that time and even after they come back. And the story I told was, I was sitting around a campfire in a very small town in Arizona with my stepdad, and everyone else there was a Vietnam veteran, and they were all sitting around talking about, they were talking about a variety of things. You know, they were talking about, you know, what took place there, you know, what they're doing now afterwards. But anyways, they were doing different things. And one person says something about being there in a particular year. And one of the guys got angry and he said, well, that's not possible, because at that time there were no women there. There was only Rangers, Special Forces, and Green Berets. And so, you know, there is no way that, you know, or you said you couldn't possibly have been there because there was no women there. And so he said, well, that's because I wasn't a woman at that time. And everybody, all of these men just froze. They didn't know what to say. But it kind of went to that same point. Now, this person ended up having a sex change operation after that. But, you know, he had served, you know, as a Ranger over there. And the sheer fact that a woman in this conversation actually even brought anger to one of these men. And it was a very strange and unusual thing for me. And I was the youngest person sitting there at the time. But I did think about this as I started going through your book, and that thought of that particular time and being invisible, you know, that after this person served, that they went through this change and now they were told they have to be invisible.
You know, one of the things that was really interesting to me that I heard came across in my research was one of the nurses' responses to "you were not there, there were no women there," was, if you didn't see a woman in Vietnam, you were lucky, because it meant you were not in a hospital.
That's a great point.
So, yeah. Although there were also these women that I met also at Veterans Day, the Red Cross workers, which were called donut dollies. And these were women who, you know, went out alone to sort of buoy the spirits of the men and read letters and write letters. And, you know, there were women who were there who were not just nurses, but nurses were the lion's share.
I love that line. If you never saw a woman, you were lucky.
Right. That's what I thought too.
Yeah. So one of the things that we talked a little bit about was the connection between then and now. So what don't we know or what might we not remember about that time? And do you think knowing those details now, is it going to be helpful to understand our country's polarized politics today?
You know, I think of that often, you know, because one of the things about that era in retrospect, when the Vietnam War ended and Nixon was out of office, there was sort of an immediate sea change. And there was a way for the country to politically pivot. And I think there was a real sense of, let's get back to who we are and who we intend to be. Because you got to remember, this was an era where the government opened fire on, you know, students who were peacefully protesting. So it was a really difficult time, and people wanted to move on from that. And so that is the question. I mean, is there a pivot point here? Is there a tipping point? How do we get back? I mean, one has to believe, if you're an optimist like I am, that there is a course and it will happen. But I don't see, you know, historically, I can't look and say, well, this needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, for those who were listening earlier, we talked a little bit about Frankie, and Frankie is sort of the star, the main character of the book. Share with us a little bit about Frankie's character and how it changes throughout the novel, and what are some of the factors that you felt influenced this transformation that you wrote for her?
Well, Frankie is very, very much a product of the research. She is very sort of emblematic of the kind of woman, young woman, who went to serve in Vietnam. So she grows up on Coronado Island, which is, we all know, is this beautiful little idyllic island right off of San Diego that is both very affluent and very military. And mm-hmm. so she grows up with, you know, both of these factors in her life. Her brother goes off to Vietnam. Her parents are so proud of his service. And yet when she signs up to follow him, they are not so proud. She lands in country at 21, barely 21, with about 2 weeks of practical nursing training, and is immediately over her head and, you know, thrown into the deep end of the ocean, and really wonders what she's doing here, that she can't imagine that she will ever be able to make a contribution, which I think is, you know, like I said, this is how so many of the nurses felt when they landed, and perhaps the male vets as well. But over the course of her tours of duty, of course, she becomes a remarkable combat nurse. And when she comes home, it is to a very, very different America, really, than the one that she left. And so you look at a woman who basically came of age in the late 50s in this time of conformity, and she comes back after the summer of love, and, you know, America is divided and protests and the Civil War movement or civil rights, you know, going on. And she expects, I think, what every soldier has every right to expect when they come home from serving their country in battle, that she will be welcomed and thanked. And like all vets, she is not, and from this war. And she is suffering from PTSD, which she can get no help from. So there's this line in the book, something like, you know, Frankie realizes that if she is going to be saved, she is going to have to save herself. And that is the arc, you know, how does a person come to terms with all of this grief and loss and anger and shame and guilt when nobody's acknowledging it and nobody is there to help you except your girlfriends who also went through it?
Mm. We're speaking with Kristen Hanna. We are talking about her book, The Women. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we have a question that is coming in from Florida that is the daughter of a woman who served as a nurse in Vietnam. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. Having a teenager at risk who is going through a traumatic experience can be difficult on parents, siblings, and all who are working with that young person. No family should have to go through this process alone. West Shield Adolescent Services is here to ensure you don't have to. Many of the psychologists and psychiatrists we work with have spoken about the stress families go through. Not just the young person, but the parents, needing to get their child to a program where they can get the help they need. Westshield aims to lessen that stress. Every case goes through a thorough intake process with one of our knowledgeable, compassionate intake coordinators. We want to know the likes, the dislikes, and the fears of each child. This important information is taken into consideration when choosing the best suited team member for each individual teenager. Westshield agents come from all different walks of life, giving us a diverse group of team members to ensure a personalized, compassionate experience for every teenager. This allows us to make certain every young person we work with gets to the chosen program in the best possible state of mind. We contacted over 600 of the youth we've worked with in the past to see where they're at now. 97% of these individuals told us how much their lives had improved, that they had better relationships with their friends and families, had gone on to marry, have kids, and were now using the skills they learned in their program to raise their own children. Our role of transporting at-risk teenagers is a vital step in the process of ensuring a youth's ability to thrive in their new environment, and is a role we don't take lightly. The recovery process can be a long one, but like any journey, it started with a single step. And we're back. We're speaking with New York Times bestselling author, Kristen Hanna. We're talking about her new book, The Women. And we have a question that's come in, and this one reads, my mother served as a nurse in the Vietnam War, and she did not talk about it until approximately a year before she passed away. And at that time, it was very, very emotional for her to even speak about it that long after it occurred. My question is, did you speak with any children of those women who served? And how did the children say that they handled it, having come from a mother who served at that time? This is from Marilyn in Orlando, Florida.
Thank you, Marilyn. Yes, I was really lucky to speak with the daughter of Linda Vandevanter, who wrote a book called Home Before Morning, which is one of the memoirs that I read in my research. And her daughter's name is Molly Stillman. And when she heard about the women coming out, she started posting all over Instagram and Facebook or wherever. I'm not very good on social media. But somehow I saw one of her posts and I reached out to her and, you know, sent her a copy of The Women. And, you know, we've ended up talking. She has a book coming out called If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry, I believe, in April. And it is very much about her journey of coming to terms with the way her mother was treated. I mean, she had sort of this bird's eye view because her mother was very much an activist. And so Molly and her family saw right what was going on with their mother and how she was treated and the difficulties that she had. Molly talks about her mother having kind of a flashback, a PTS flashback during a concert where she brought Molly was young and had brought her friends, and how difficult it was to understand all this. And I think books like that, I'm hoping that this book, The Women, will spark other books and other conversations, because most of the children that I am meeting, their vet parents didn't speak about this at all, ever.
Wow. Well, and coming back to you, I learned that you're currently touring around the country in regards and speaking about this book. How have your travels been going so far? And what is the difference between this tour and the tours that you've had for your previous books?
The really huge difference on this book, I saw this a little bit with The Nightingale, which is my book that set in World War II France. But this book in particular, the response that I'm getting from female vets really across the board, so it's not just Vietnam, I think female vets in general feel invisible and forgotten. So I'm hearing a lot from female vets. I'm hearing a lot from the children. Like I said, you know, people talking about how they had to process this grief within their own family when they couldn't talk about it. And coming back to this idea that remembrance is so important. And so there are, we had this, I had an event in Costa Mesa, actually, and an Army nurse that I've met named Eileen Moore. Now I think she's a judge in California. She, you know, stood up to the microphone and said, I've brought four of my fellow sister nurse veterans with me. Wow. And this 2,000 person crowd gave them a standing ovation, absolutely spontaneously. And that's the kind of thing that I'm seeing that is just really unusual, obviously. So I think this book, it's hitting a nerve. It's coming at a time where we are losing our Vietnam vets. And and hopefully it is sparking this conversation that can help heal them in some way. That's what I keep hearing, that this book is helping to heal them.
Well, it sounds like your producer or agent was right when you went to them about 20 years ago and they said it's not the right time. It sounds like it is the right time. Now, again, in doing some of my research, I learned that that this book is being optioned for a film. And that's got to be very exciting. Can you give us some of the details? And if so, how much can you give it?
All I can tell you is at this moment, it's Warner Brothers and it's feature film. And they're very excited about it. I mean, obviously, the book is just sparking such a huge and visceral emotional response. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I'm very excited about it.
Well, we will be keeping our eye out for it. Is there anything else that you're working on now that you would like to share? We've only got about another minute, but if there's anything else you would like to share, please let us know what you're working on now and how we can get that information out to people.
You know, I don't actually have anything that I'm working on now. I should be, but I'm not. What I will say is if you read The Women and you love it, and what I'm hearing is people want more information because this was forgotten on so many levels for so long. I would say that in the back of the book, there are a listing of some memoirs and some nonfiction books that I found really, really interesting. And I think give an important insight into parts of this story. And you might try reading some of those.
Excellent. Again, for everybody out there, the book is The Women. The author is Kristen Hanna. Highly recommend that you go out and that you get this. I don't think we need to tell you it's going to be at whatever bookstore you happen to go to. If you have the opportunity to use your local bookstore, feel free to do that. Anything that we can do to help keep our local bookstores in business. And if you contact them, if they say they don't have it, I'll bet they can order it real quick. So anyway, Kristen, thank you so much for coming on. And thank you for shining a light on something that for many people has been forgotten.
Thank you, Alan. This was really great talking to you. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And for everybody out there, be with us next week when we're going to be joined by Renee Gregorio as she discusses her new book, The Writer Who Inhibits Your Body. Now, for everybody out there, visit our archives of past interviews at Answers Network, or you can just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many other popular podcast platforms. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know that we greatly appreciate it. The next time you're on Instagram, Facebook, or X, remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be with us next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.